She is Sarah, of a translation, has her as Canaanite. So the casual reader who picks up the Bible and reads it quickly at a superficial level, Jesus is a bigot, a racist, perhaps a power freak who only concedes to heal her daughter after she has publicly humiliated herself. Brothers and sisters, this is why studying theology and working through the Bible together is so important. Many will be familiar with the teaching you're about to hear, but if you do, I'm afraid of what I want to say in the next half, so bear with me. Kenneth Bailey, theologian, said this on the following slide. Descartes, the 17th century philosopher, concluded, "I think, therefore I am." African theologians would reply, "I am because we are." Today we live in a highly individualistic society. Everything works around the I and the me. This was a very different time when this text was written. Everything revolved around family and culture. And community is good and right. It is vital to our health and flourishing as human beings. The disciples had a powerful sense of belonging. But their sense of belonging was predicated upon the basis of the exclusion of others. They were Jewish, others were not. Jesus, in his reading, takes them on a very powerful and significant journey. This is a journey that is a physical journey as well as a spiritual journey. We go to the next slide, you can see a map, I don't know how clear it will be, but this journey, they're going from Tyre to Galilee, so the red dot on the left to Galilee is seen on the right. And Jesus, for reasons I'm sure they didn't realise at the time, wanted to take them via Sidon, which is the dot above. That's like going from London to Cornwall via Manchester, on foot. Theologians think that it took him 8 months. Out of a 3-year ministry, that is a significant portion of his time. What he has to say in this passage is of vital importance. He is taking the disciples, these people with a powerful sense of Jewish identity and belonging, out of their comfort zone, physically and spiritually. They're leaving Palestine. They're going into the headquarters of Baal worship, an outside place and an outside people. There are two things happening in this passage. First, yes, he is ministering to the woman, which we'll come to in a moment, but perhaps more importantly, this is for the formation of the disciples. It is for their teaching. Go back to the text. Next slide, please. Now, the woman was a Gentile of Syrophoenician origin. She begged him to cast the demon out of her daughter. This woman of extraordinary faith is breaking two powerful social constructs that were in place at this time. Firstly, she is female and Jesus is male. This may not seem like a big deal to us today, but perhaps even today in very conservative parts of the Middle East, it is not common for male and female strangers to converse. Certainly in this time, if you were a rabbi, you wouldn't address a woman in public even if you were related to her. There is a possible segue here into a sermon on Jesus the feminist, but for today, I'll resist. Another time, perhaps. Secondly, she is a Gentile. Jesus is a Jew. Again, it's possible to read this text and separate ourselves from it. It happens in another world, in another time. But my friends, if you are not of Jewish descent, as you may be, you are a Gentile. You are not chosen. You are not part of this community. You are outside the disciples' little inner circle. Stick with me again. In other translations, Jesus actually doesn't answer the Syrophoenician woman straight away. He doesn't answer her request at all, and that is entirely in keeping with what the disciples expect of him. They have been waiting for the king of the Jews. Their very purity is at prepared to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs. The children in this passage are all of Jewish descent, the beloved, the protected. And the dogs are all for naught. And that word is taken right out of Jewish culture, and at that time it would have been utterly degrading to her. Jesus is speaking to her, but I want to suggest that he is speaking to the disciples, and in that lies his greater purpose. Jesus is vocalizing what they are thinking. It's not right to take something from the Israelites and give it to the Gentiles, throwing it away needlessly. This is a teaching that would have been ingrained in them growing up. In John's Gospel, we are told that Jesus comes looking for true worshippers. He came to his own, and his own knew him not. So Jesus, in this passage, is speaking true worship. The heart of one who is willing to grow in knowledge and love of him. As some of you know, I am something of a spiritual mongrel. I was raised in a very high Anglican Catholic church in South Wales. As a teenager, I attended a non-denominational church. I came back to my faith in my early 20s and went to a charismatic evangelical church and have completed a curacy in a liberal Catholic church. And it has been a privilege to see God at work in all of those environments. And yes, they're not without fault. Each one has its weaknesses and its failings, but the packaging I have learned does not matter. What matters is the true heart of worship. And that is what Jesus finds in this Syrophoenician woman. Let's contrast that with the disciples' expectation. They've been with Jesus a year and a half at this point, and they're just not getting it. They're not understanding his grace. Perhaps that's why he takes them on such a journey. The shocker of his ministry so far has been that he's at odds with the Pharisees. The supposed true worshippers, the religious royalty of their day. The Pharisees have what N.T. Wright called a protective fence around their identity. And Jesus was in the process of eroding that fence away. The big reveal. Jesus' teaching is subtle and it is powerful, because there is a linguistic play on words in the second half of this reading to illustrate, I believe, the unbounded, all-inclusive love and grace of God. The word street dog or cur, which has been used, was to describe a mangy animal, unwanted, undesirable, but the word that Jesus uses, which you can only know if you study this together, is that of couple. Beloved, one of the family, part of us. The disciples' faces must have been an absolute picture. Jesus was saying, this one belongs. She is part of the family. That would have rocked them. Not only is he refusing to use their degrading language, he is making it clear that this outsider, this unclean woman, is to be considered a sister. Church's family. She was part of the family. What I find fascinating is that in her faith, she comes just seeking crumbs from the Lord's table. This is in the context of the feeding of the 4,000 on one side and the 5,000 on the other side. And she is there simply asking for scraps. Such is her knowledge that all she needs is him. And unlike the disciples, she understands the grace of Christ. She too uses the word puppy to refer to herself. She isn't claiming to be one of them. She isn't claiming to be one of the Jewish descent or chosen. She simply knows that Jesus is for everyone. I think in the church, there is a real danger that we make Jesus out to be a really nice, helpful guy. He's a cuddly figure who just did great things. I think we miss the point. The arrival of Jesus shook up the order of society. to this whole community. Next slide. I served for a short time at a church in Bath, and as we exited that building, on the masonry above the door, you could see the words, "Here lies your mission field." And it was a beautiful and sobering thing to see as we exited the church. Our mission is outside of these walls, as well as to love and serve one another. Now, I don't need to tell you this. I'm preaching to the converted. Your mission is to be a lighthouse to this community, to draw the lost safely into the love of Jesus. Jesus, of course, does do what the woman is asking for. He does heal her daughter. But there are steps along the way that perhaps just in that moment were of greater importance and significance. Jesus is for everyone. Quote from one of my favourite theologians, N.T. Wright, which is on the last slide. What Jesus did was seen by the disciples and written up by Mark as a sign that he meant what he said about cleanness and uncleanness. The old barriers, the old taboos were being swept away. The dogs under the table are sharing in the children's bread, and pretty soon they too will become children alongside the others. As Jesus dies, Mark has a Roman centurion affirm that he truly is the Son of God. What was anticipated with the Syrophoenician woman became universally true. The King of the Jews has become the Savior of the world. Jesus is for everyone. And of course, he heals her daughter the moment the point has been made. In the death and resurrection of him, so we become heirs, inheritors, conquerors. We become a family. And when we are willing to invest and serve and love one another, so we see the power of walking as a family. And what do families do? They eat together. They break bread together. They share good times together. They share really hard times together. The Syrophoenician woman asks for crumbs because families share food, and she knew that Jesus was for everyone. Jesus models hospitality, and something that Finn and I are really passionate about is the importance of sharing food together. If I have the next slide, please. So something that we are really keen to do is to open up the vicarage for a vicarage lunch once a week, which will not look like that. My dining table is not that rich. But you are all welcome. It's going to take us some time. There's quite a few of you. But over the weeks and years, we would want to invite everyone around to share in lunch with us, with no agenda, just to be together, breaking bread, enjoying the good stuff of life. Another reason I believe Alpha to be so incredibly effective is that they begin every week with just this thing. There's no religious talk over the meal. People sit together. How's your day? How are you doing? Eating together. It's a powerful spiritual thing, and it communicates in that day that people are made in the image of God and loved exactly as they are. Whatever's going to come from the discussion, we will disagree, but we love each other. Next slide. I saw this on social media recently, and I rather liked it, so I thought I would share it with you this morning. Love your neighbour, who doesn't look like you, think like you, love like you, speak like you, pray like you, vote like you. Love your neighbour, no exceptions. Who is the person you take exception to? We've all got them. There's that person that just really gets under your skin. Friends, we're being called to love them. Even if we can't quite like them, we have to love, because Jesus is for everyone. Point two, and the second half is quicker, I promise. Jesus is alive. Now the next slide, please. Oh, sorry, next one. Thank you very much. I saw this article in the Guardian recently. Church in crisis. Only 2% of young adults identify as Church of England. And I tend to resist sensationalism in the media because I think it's unhelpful, but actually I trust that this is not fake news. I trust that most broadsheets are not in the habit of doing that, so I want to read a quote for you from that article. The Church of England is facing a generational catastrophe, with only 2% of young adults identifying with it, while 7 out of 10 under 24s say they have no religion. Secularism is on the rise. Jen pointed out in a sermon a few weeks ago that a survey has found that 52% of people had no religion in 2017, compared with 41% in 2002. Back to the article. The trend indicates the affiliation of the Church of England could become negligible with successive generations. Researchers found a significant gap between people identifying with the Church and those actually attending church services. Those who say they belong to the Church of England, only 1 in 5 actually come on more than once a month basis. Average weekly attendance in the Church of England has dropped below 1 million for the first time ever. Over the past 10 years, average weekly attendance has declined by 12%. Church of England services now attract approximately 1.4% of the population. Attendance at Christmas, Easter has gradually declined, as have baptisms, church marriages and funerals. Roger Harding of the National Centre for Social Research, which conducted this survey, said the figures show an unrelenting decline in Church of England. On the basis of the radical love of Jesus that we have heard about in the first half of this sermon, for what my life is worth, over my dead body is this the death of the Church. Over my dead body, and not because I love the Church, although I do, and not because I love the community and the family that I find within the Church, although I do, and not because I care for our funny, weird, churchy rituals and traditions. If you were here on Thursday, there are plenty of them. Because I do. But because Jesus is alive. He is alive today. And he is in the business of saving lives today. That same Jesus that decimated social conventions in meeting with the Syrophoenician woman is still meeting with people today and healing people today. He is restoring marriages. He is mending broken hearts. He is still giving us a purpose and a passion through the gift of his Spirit. Jesus is alive, and we stand on that foundation. That's why. The reality is that globally speaking, the Church is growing. It's growing rapidly. If you look at the statistics in places like Nigeria and China, it is staggering the rate at which the Church is growing. And that is exciting. I want to be part of that. I want to be part of that here. Throughout the course, 29 million people have heard the good news of Jesus. They have heard that they are loved exactly as they are. 29 million people. The Jesus who loves the weirdos, who loves the freaks, who loves the outcasts and the unlovable, who loves the socially acceptable with their hidden thoughts and behaviors. The Jesus who sees us exactly as we are and loves us. Next slide, please. Commenting on the article that I just read, Bishop James said, looking at statistics does not give the whole story. In his diocese alone, one church has grown from 50 people to 450 in 2 years. Gaslight Church Birmingham, planted and with a small group of adults and within 6 months, has grown to 300 people. Harbour Church Portsmouth, planted with 15 people in 2016, now sees 350 people over 3 sites every single Sunday. St. Swithin, Bournemouth, planted with 11 adults in 2014, now sees over 600 people every single liability.